Only spot in a state-of-the-art underground vault today.
I have an idea.
Hello.
Yeah, if y'all are good with this.
Are you going to say war never changes?
Well, no, not exactly. That's to be too cliche, you know? I don't sound enough like Ron Perlman to make that work.
Who out of all of us can pull off Ron Perlman?
Should we just, that's what I want to know before we start anything off. And, you know, one of the sad things about all this is that we never got to hear Ron Perlman anywhere in there.
But, I'll pull off Ron Perlman, all right.
Everybody, everybody give me your best Ron Perlman. I think that's the best way to open this. Who wants to go first?
I need to hear it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Bring up a random Ron Perlman clip.
Yeah. the easy way to get Ron Perlman is just go, crap.
Right.
Just say war never changes. We'll just.
What's up, bitch? I'm Hellboy. What's up?
Oh no! Trying to do the lich from Adventure Time is not a good idea.
I forgot that was him.
Yeah.
He's done so much. It's like
my name is Hannibal Chow.
Oh God! If I could speak French, I would do the City of Lost Children.
Hey, quick question. Do any of you guys want to set the world on fire?
No, I just want to start a flame in your heart.
Aw.
Welcome everyone to Undercooked Analysis. We are all here to do something a little different. We normally only talk. Seems like we only talk about Bethesda and its adjacent properties and such on the dregs. But as Kayla suggested a while ago, we are dragging out the dregs. We're dragging it into the forefront so everybody gets to experience it. So on this first edition of Dragging the Dregs, we're going to talk about the Fallout TV show.
Because we want to
and war never changes.
Fuck you.
This is the year of fuck you. We're doing whatever the hell we want.
It's a kind of rejuvenating thing, to be honest. I like it.
How was it?
Oh, I liked it.
I thought it was very good.
What did we watch? No.
Something.
I just gotta be funny, the implication that I'm here and I just didn't see it. No, I watched it.
Who's everybody here?
I think they know most of us, but I'm David.
I'm Kayla.
I'm Alan.
I'm drunk. No, not really.
Welcome to Jackass!
This is not the Jameson tape, so I don't have to say what I'm drinking, but because it's relevant, I will say I'm currently enjoying a sarsaparilla.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. Aw.
I had an extra bottle of mead, so I'm just drinking my bottle of mead.
Howdy, partner!
Honestly, Sunset Sarsaparilla sounded so much more tastier than a Nuka-Cola.
Yeah, like, honestly, if you were presented with either or, I'm going to take the Sunset Sarsaparilla over the Nuka-Cola any day.
We don't have Sunset Sarsaparilla, but we do have leftover ginger beer.
We do have it. It's different. Sarsaparilla is like more root beer adjacent, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, I mean, you've had sarsaparilla and you liked it.
It's okay.
Yeah. I know you don't like root beer.
The recipe for Nuka-Cola in the Fallout book sounds like a root beer, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Irony.
It also sounds like something I'd fuck with, so...
16 times the cane sugar.
16 tons, and what do you get?
The same radioactive isotope in each drink. Before we get too far, this is going to be a no-holds-barred. We're just going to talk about the show. We're going to talk about it with spoilers. So if you haven't watched it yet or don't want to get it spoiled for you, stop around here somewhere. We'll give you a fair warning, but
this is
a chance for us to all commiserate and for me to be my usual lore obsessed self and talk about just stuff. We're going to be all over the place. There's no rhyme or reason to this. This is perfect UCA content.
Everyone, major spoiler coming to start off the show. Because I have to ask David how he feels about now. I've mentally gotten to a place where I'm.
Okay, I'm going to say it now. Spoilers start now. Stop your episode now. Go away if you don't want to listen.
Hey, how do we feel about Vault-Tec dropping the bombs?
Vault-Tec did not drop the bomb!
Yeah, I thought, like,
Yeah.
The lore, the canon lore, is that we don't know for sure. We just know it hit California or the West Coast first.
No, it's not canon.
I'm almost positive.
Okay, wait.
Let him say his piece.
Okay. The established lore is, and this is coming from the head guy whose name escapes me right now, is that China did it because we were developing HEVs.
China was under the impression that we had even developed the new plague, like, and that the FEV was a response to that. So
here is the allowance I'm giving the show. They didn't say that Vault-Tec dropped the bombs.
Yes!
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's more important to the story that Walton Goggins knows that they at the very least floated the idea.
Yeah. So everybody, I'm glad you corrected that, because me and Kayla were talking about this. Everybody keeps saying Vault-Tec dropped the bomb. We're like, they floated the idea. They had the capacity to do it, but we don't know for sure if they did.
And
that's like, to me, the big point is that Vault-Tec was ready to pull that ripcord. But if Vault-Tec actually dropped the bomb, then why would one of its top executives' daughter not be in a vault when they dropped the bomb? You know, she's with Cooper Howard at that kid's birthday party when Los Angeles starts getting blown to hell.
Also, in New Vegas, there actually is a point where Robert House tells our courier that I had an idea of when the bomb was going to be dropped, but I was 20 hours off.
Uh-huh.
I think he had an idea when Vault-Tec had planned to drop the bomb, but I think someone beat him to it.
And this is assuming House had that in mind, as well as his other predictions, because I'm going to say right now, one of my legit favorite moments in the entire show, just from someone who cares about the lore, is watching everybody in that Vault-Tec meeting turn cartoonishly evil, except House, who's still super fucking skeptical about the entire thing and is totally leaning back and saying all the right stuff and not giving anything away. And I'm just never like, oh, he's got this. He knows what's going on. The House always fucking wins. And keep in mind, I'm not someone who like is always pro Mr. House, but I like that his character is seemingly intact. You know what I'm saying?
I want to zoom out real briefly, because as fun as that scene was, I kind of felt like it was too much. And in this season, it was nice that we started getting some reveals towards the end, but did we need to have that entire boardroom meeting explained at this time? Because it goes if you play through, most of the Fallout games, you don't get much. Like, this, as far as the Fallout universe, is a shit ton of backstory that, is accelerated. It kind of felt like a little too much, and it was trying to clue in maybe TV audiences who don't play the games, which I understand. Yeah. But they already teased a season two. It was kind of like, and here's everyone's motivations for everything. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess the mystery's gone a little bit.
I mean, that was one of my minor nitpicks with it. I mean, just when they started going into all the stuff about the vaults and the experiments, I was a little bit like, but again, that's why to me, House
hit it like from the video game.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. What if we... Like the guy, the chief scientist of West Tech is there, and he's just like, what if we had a vault where we created super mutants? And I'm like,
stop.
I chalk it
up to, because in these days of streaming, you don't know if you're going to get another season. We're not in syndicated television anymore. So maybe it was, let's try to just, go out with a fucking bang and try to hook people and sell ourselves for a season two. But you already are like, hey, we're going to New Vegas in season two, which I audibly stood up and cheered at. I saw that and went, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that was David and I too. We were like, we screamed. There were two times David and I screamed. One was for that, and the second one was seeing Matt Berry by the pool.
Yes. One of the things I wrote on I made a Facebook post about just like my thoughts after watching the season the first time. Spoilers, I've watched it twice now.
Nice.
Was like, I had a moment where I was like, oh man, that better not be all the Matt Berry they give us. And then it was like, here's actual Matt Berry.
I'm a little sad that they didn't take the Mapberry robot as a companion.
Aww.
I was waiting for him to get fixed up.
I hope that happens. I hope that something like that happens, like in season two.
Or we get another Mr. Handy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because apparently his voice is in all of them, so.
Apparently, I love that the idea that the default setting, that was kind of cute, that the default, it's basically all Mr. Handys are like a Siri, and they all have that voice because they recorded it from him, yeah. But that the default character programming is Bartholomew Codsworth, which then explains the out-of-the-box nature of Codsworth in Fallout 4, which I thought was cute.
So
really, what's going to happen is normally when people talk about this show, they just talk about the show. We're talking about it like, and this is exactly what I wanted.
Rewatching the series made me realize something I thought was an error that they did not plan for was not. So that good. Big final fight between the ghoul and the Brotherhood of Steel. He mentions like a weakness in their armor that he remembered how to exploit.
Yeah.
And earlier in the show, he has a shootout fight with Maximus. And I was like, wait, why didn't he just kill Maximus there and then? Because there is a throwaway line about the armor having a tempered lining.
I will say the final,
episode,
for the most part, the pacing is very good up until the final episode. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh shit, we got to cram every as much we can in.
Yeah.
One of my notes is, I think they could have.
Hold on. Are we to assume that no other T-60 pilot used tempered lining? None of them.
I think Maximus mentioned it like it was something like rare.
Does he say it's rare? I don't know, man. There's like three legions that drop on that final battle. No one went with tempered lining. I mean, whatever. Like, these are nitpicks, but
going a little earlier, I liked when the Brotherhood showed up at the initiate training place and they were all staring at the power armor like they were just in utter awe. And I know you were there for this moment, Abysmi. I was like, I love the fact that they're treating power armor like it's rare again, like it's something unique.
Yes.
Fallout 4, everybody and their dad had power armor. So it's like nice to have it be the other way around.
This might be my lack of lore knowledge, but there was this one thing that bothered me. And maybe I just didn't know this as well. But there's a point when they run into the fiends and she's like, who are the fiends? And he says, oh, they eat people. I'm like, what the fuck? That's the first thing you say? And also, that's not what defined them, right? Like, am I crazy?
No, I don't think you're crazy. I thought what defined the fiends is that they're just absolute degenerate humans.
Yeah, I thought they were
chem addicts and they're rapists. And
you know. I will agree that it was kind of a missed opportunity to talk about chem addiction because they don't really touch on that at all in the series, at least not in any significant way.
No. But
maybe it was just, maybe they're saving that for, you know, I don't know, the cons or something that'll get a bigger spot in season two. I don't know.
But here's my issue with it. The fact that he says, oh, they're defined by being cannibals. Okay, what if they run into the White Glove Society in the next season of New Vegas? That just diminishes the shock of like these people that become cannibals because we already got another group of cannibals.
I mean, you're assuming that we're going to see the White Glove Society.
That's an assumption.
There's so many factions in New Vegas. Yeah. Can't put them all in.
Yeah, I know. But like, if that was the fiends defining, but even in the idea of the games, if that was the fiends defining thing was they eat people and they all do that. That's their the main thing they do. I feel like that undermines the shock of the White Glove Society because it's like,
again, who knows? Like they're planning for a season they may not even be able to be greenlit for.
They are. I'm just saying.
They have been greenlit.
Yeah, it's greenlit.
Baller. Okay. Baller. Excellent.
I get what you're saying, Kayla.
Here's what I'll say. I have to imagine cannibalism in the Wasteland is at least pretty prevalent.
Yeah.
No, but I get that. I get that cannibalism does happen. I mean, with New Vegas, we had Cook, who was described as being a cannibal.
I think the fact that that's coming from Maximus is important.
Yeah, that's
That's Maximus's understanding of what a fiend is.
True. That could be what he knows them for in the small region that he's ever been in. Who knows?
I mean, to be fair, they did shoot him with a tooth.
Okay. Things that I like. I liked seeing Chris Parnell. That was a shocking.
Oh, Chris Parnell is the overseer of Vault 4. Yeah.
Because I was like, wait, I know that voice.
Chris Parnell.
Another thing I realized on a second viewing is that his right-hand woman, Birdie, that's probably not her name. He calls Lucy Goosey, because that's just what he thinks her name is.
So
her name probably isn't Birdie.
Probably that's like probably Bridget just or something.
Chris Parnell has been calling her.
It's probably like Gertie or something like that.
He just can't
read. I thought of that. That's really funny.
Yeah.
Chris Parnell, so that was fun. We already talked about Matt Berry being there. I liked his, all the roles we have him in. It was nice to have also a practical Mr. Handy as the, it was a big puppet, basically, which was cool.
As usual, the mystery behind the vaults is very, one of my favorite things about the game sometimes is like going through a vault and it's like, ooh, there's actually something deep behind these walls that you realize the messed up experiment that's behind it. And I'm glad to know there was one.
Yeah. The vault trifecta was a neat angle to explore in Fallout lore. It felt true to Fallout, but also like tied in really at its own thing. And I appreciated that.
So other questions I would like to ask the group.
Okay.
Do you think Finn is an intentional parody? Do you think Maximus is an intentional parody of Finn from Star Wars?
I don't think it's a parody. I think it's a, hey, we're actually going to pick up and do the idea that you started and never did.
Yeah. Because
it works really, really well. And actually, that segues into something I want to bring up, because I was ready to write Maximus off like the second to last episode, because he flip-flops so much between almost having an arc and then not, and then going back and then going back, and then I was like, oh my god, you're too stupid to live. And then at the
savant perk, gang.
Well, at the very end, like the failing upwards comes full circle, and it's so well executed to me. The fact that he's standing there, he's felt the sting of betrayal. He finally found the people that hurt him that he wants to hurt, his entire purpose for joining the Brotherhood, and he failed in that. And he's just kind of dumbfounded. And the rest of the Legion come up and are like, oh my god, you killed the faction leader. All hail Maximus. And it just like beautifully, beautifully came together. And I said, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
And I just don't see that in a lot of media these days. And I thought that was really, really cool. Like just very, very clever.
Also,
I agree with you.
I also would like to bring up, so for the most part, it feels like a regular violent rated R show. Violence is amazing. But in episode 6, when they get to the vault,
four.
And Lucy uncovers it. There's this one part, because there was a, Dave and I were like joking, like, oh, look, Kyle MacLachlan's here. I wonder if David Lynch will direct an episode. And then it gets to the part where she sees a video of a pregnant woman giving birth to piranhas that eat her alive. And I'm like looking at Dave, I'm like, maybe David Lynch did direct this. What the fuck did I just? That was like so trippy.
I've been wanting to do something like this since Eraserhead.
As long as no one watches this on their fucking phone.
Wait,
this is going to be on Amazon? Fuck that.
I watched this alone so no one got to hear me as he approached New Vegas going, Diane, 11:30 a.m. Approaching the city of New Vegas.
Oh no. By the end, Dave and I were like, oh, it's Evil Cooper.
he really did grow full circle.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I know we're all over the place, but that's exactly
also
what I expected.
Holy shit. Because I think it was because they show young Hank or young.
And oh, it, yeah.
It's clearly.
It's just
superimposed, but or like digitally done.
Oh, that was rough.
Yeah, it was.
I was like, oh no, Dale Cooper, what'd they do to you?
He looked less like young Kyle MacLachlan and a little bit like a weird combination of like AI Kyle MacLachlan and a little bit of Bruce Campbell.
No, you know what he looks like? He looked like Kyle MacLachlan, but from Showgirls.
Hey, he's going back to Vegas.
It all comes back to Vegas.
It really does. Okay.
So, oh my God! Vegas was also the main.
It was in it was in the return in Twin Peaks. The return.
There we go. It all comes back to Vegas, baby.
There's one note that pops up three times in my notes for the series, which is, why am I attracted to noseless zombie Walton Goggins?
Okay,
his dialogue is so good. It is so on brand for Fallout. And that was my one like biggest thing, because when we saw the trailers and the sneak peeks, I was like, okay, it looks good. Clearly, they have put in effort for sets and costumes and all that. Please nail the tone. And they did really well, especially through him.
It did. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you know what? I saw something to that effect where someone wrote, you know, incel men always complaining about it's the way that, you know, they look. That's like, you know, men look, that's like an important thing. And that's the only thing women care about.
Mm-hmm.
Women are already writing thirsty fan fiction about the glorified version of Cooper Howard. So don't give me that bullshit. That's basically what it said.
Oh, by the way, anytime I heard, oh, Mr. Howard, and I'm like, here's Todd. Just...
You know, they named him Howard because of that.
Oh, they absolutely did.
I will say, we say they dumped a lot of exposition. I am amazed at the amount of restraint this season had.
For most of it, yeah.
Yeah.
And not just in regards to stuff fans expect from a Fallout series. Fans are like, yeah, there's going to be Deathclaws and fucking super mutants. And I think we see the skull of a Deathclaw at the end.
We do, yes.
Yeah. In the
Enclave, yeah. We see the hand of a super mutant.
Yeah, we see. That's a nice. That was a great bit of restraint with the super mutant. It feels like foreshadowing. Yeah. Now, the other thing too is it has remarkable restraint about playing its cards close to the chest with stuff that we know as Fallout fans that have bigger lore implications that they haven't answered yet.
Yeah.
Why in the fuck are there still Enclave around? For one, how many times do you have to kill the Enclave for them? And they say remnants. I get that, but Jesus Christ, they're still.
It's a very functioning Enclave.
Yeah.
It seemed like, or at least in that one base, you know?
Yeah.
We also still don't know, considering how many pre-war characters there are in this story, which is more than most Fallout stories.
It's a lot, yeah.
I mean, we got the ghoul. We've got all of the executives that are cryo-frozen in Vault Tech, in Vault 31. The Roomba, the brain in a Roomba that is Bud Adkins, and Lee Moldaver.
Well,
is also pre-war somehow. We don't know how.
But yeah. You say
my best guess is she was either cryo-frozen or she's a Conrad Kellogg situation where she's a cyborg.
You say that, but like, there's plenty of Fallout games where Fallout 4, it opens with you being a pre-war.
Well, this
character.
Is true, but that's more of recent.
But and then I mean, with New Vegas, we have Raoul who talked about his life pre-war.
Oh, true.
There's the Robo in the DLC. We got Robo Brains who talk about their life pre-war. It's just, there's the DLCs for the new Fallout 4. Spoilers for one of them, you actually get to solve a murder mystery that involves Robo Brains.
But we don't follow them closely.
We don't. That's true. They're usually all the pre-war characters. I think it's the same amount as a typical Fallout game,
okay. But
I think we don't usually follow them that closely. It's usually characters you come across over time.
Yeah. So this is, I guess that's a good point. You're like, this is an exercise in kind of exploring those sort of stories.
Yeah.
And again, I think that was for people who don't know about Fallout and they're going to, if they didn't, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. If they didn't do this exposition dump, they're probably afraid that people were going to be like, well, you have to, what happened? What happened with the boardroom meeting? You have to tell us, you know, it's important. And no, it's not. But don't know Fallout, you would think it is.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that, I mean, Paprika has only touched upon the Fallout games doesn't really know the lore that well. Mm-hmm. And you said she enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. No, she really liked it. I think she pretty much everything we praised it for that's not lore specific are the same things she loved. She loved the pacing, the setting, the outfits. She was just drooling over the T-60 armor. No, it looks great. And she just got her new computer. So I said, okay, we got to get New Vegas on that and get all the DLC so you can start playing for season two. So yeah, like it's a very well constructed show. It's very, very well done. So and being a fan of Fallout is just a plus.
Yes.
So which one of us is going to run Fallout on the Twitch, Creative Horror Twitch?
I'm really thinking about doing a Fallout 76 stream.
Holy shit! Yes.
25 years after the Great War in Appalachia.
I played Fallout 76 for like a week, and it's fine.
Yeah. I think it took, 10 years to become fine?
Yeah.
But ever since the show came out, there's now an option to start out a character at level 20.
Oh, cool.
Oh, shit.
I might. I still haven't beaten Fallout 4. We've talked about this.
We just recently completed the main quest of Fallout 4 and Far Harbor. Still haven't done Nuka World, but...
I have made significant progress into Fallout 4 like 4 times and have stopped every time.
If Abysme decides to stream him playing Old World Blues, I will watch the fuck out of that.
I'm like halfway through it.
The best DLC, the best one. Are we talking about the best one?
Yeah, the best one.
Yeah. How do you feel?
You bet your ass.
How do you feel about it, Abysme, so far?
I mean, I love it. and I'm rarely, I mean, depending on the game, but like in an action, you know, FPS, I don't like sitting around listening to dialogue that I can't skip or that I don't like have the option to enter into for the most part. I'm a fast reader. This is the first time I've just like sat and listened to an incredibly long conversation, a scripted event, and not had a single problem with it because the heads talking to each other was fucking hilarious.
Yes.
I love walking around and just hearing the mad scientist just blurt out random nonsense. It's so fucking fun. I'm loving it.
I'm so glad to hear that.
There's a, my favorite one intelligence moment happens in that DLC. You're given the quest to get a password for something. I don't remember exactly what it is. But if you have one intelligence, you can skip that whole quest. Because the password is ice cream. And if you have one intelligence, you are given the option to respond to one of the brains, ice cream!
Ice cream!
Thank you, sir.
One of my favorite moments in the DLC so far is you can go to a biodome where they all used to live.
Uh-huh.
And it's just fucking empty.
Yeah.
And it's eerie. It's so you think you're gonna get snuck up upon, but after you clear like the initial like guards or whatever, like there's just nothing and you're just going through all of their old houses. And it's just a very slow break where there's like little ambience. I just thought that was really well done.
Oh, it is. It is. You get to pick up all these little cues about their lives and who they are. So you piece together whose house is whose. Go ahead.
Okay, back.
I was about to say, going back to the show. So
yes. Go ahead. Going back to the show. Is it weird to say, I know how violent the Fallout games are. I'm kind of shocked to see that violence occur in the show. I know that it's Amazon and yes, but I don't know why it kind of surprises me that I'd expect to see that violence.
Yeah, it's surprisingly brutal. Like, I don't know if Fallout games are particularly known for, like, and not everybody uses the bloody disgusting perk.
Well, depends. I guess it depends on what kind of person you are. I mean, it never bothered me, but I've known people who are like, oh my gosh, that game is so violent. I'm like, it is?
Like, we're desensitized.
Yes.
But then I think the initial, like, comes from the fact that this is another video game show that was well done, which hopefully we continue with that streak. But
that'd be nice.
Yeah, I think it's just a little, you know, surprising to see an adaptation of a video game show that isn't afraid to be as violent as its source material can be.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just what it is.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. And I'm glad it didn't shy away from it, because it does, and at the very least, it continues to emphasize the brutality of life in the wasteland, you know? Yeah. Just really gets the point across that this place sucks. Everything here sucks. Even if you're in a place like, the whole thing felt so great and gritty and disgusting. I love that. Okay, I want to put a pin in the environments, because that's going to lead me to wanting to talk about certain things involving the broader lore. But we talked about Maximus. We talked about the ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
What about Lucy? How does everybody feel about Lucy?
I love, within the first 5 minutes, she says, yeah, I fucked my cousin.
Yeah. She fooled around with her cousin.
I mean, there's a lot.
Which makes sense. Like, it makes sense for the context. And I'm like, the fact that they just put that in, it's like, okay, well, we're not really, you know, pulling any punches here. Wonderful. Thank you.
Well, also, there was a lot of hints in that a lot of the Fallout shelters, if they stayed long enough, yeah, eventually they're going to end up fucking their cousins. And because that's what happens when you don't have.
I know this was the vault that was attempting to make a stable breeding program. So you didn't get a lot of that going. But the reveal that it was all just to create happy little Vault Tech loyal workers to repopulate the Earth.
The best of the best managers or whatever.
Yeah. I feel like I'm about to segue off of that, but that's going to take me away from Lucy.
I think I get what you mean. So you know how, like, there's that one vault where, which I still find probably the most fucked up, is where they harvest...
The eugenics vault? Vault 75?
Yeah, the one where, like, oh, let's see which kids are the strongest and smartest and all that.
Yeah, that one.
And then you harvest their DNA and shit.
Yeah.
So that felt, I could understand this. I don't know. The idea, like, oh, we're going to get the best managers out of this. I'm like, that's not how that works.
The managers are running things, though. What I think they're trying to do is, they're not saying these people are going to run it. They're creating Vault Tech loyal people who will completely base themselves around Vault Tech loyalty. They want to populate the Earth with essentially loyal customers.
Basically people who adore Vault. That's true. Because Lucy was told the whole time it's like pro Vault Tech. Although
she looks at the Vault Boy for inspiration, which I thought was great.
For hope.
Yeah. Especially that bit when, I also appreciate they didn't cheapen the idea that when Cooper Howard is revealed to kind of be the inspiration for the Vault Boy design. It's not that stupid thing that they advertised. Like, we're going to get the Vault Boy's backstory.
That was the worst way to advertise that. Don't you want to know about the backstory about the Vault Boy?
No,
who gives a
shit? No. If that's what you're putting emphasis on.
I think he basically was the Vault Boy until, like, the revelation that he was a communist, quote unquote. And I think that's when they phased in the cartoon Vault Boy. I think that's the implication there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the flashbacks are happening at least 2, 3, maybe even 4 years, still in the 2070s, but I think it's not immediately before the Great War, you know?
So I think he really was essentially the first run of the Vault Boy, but then we found out he was doing kids' birthday parties because it's outed that he was quote-unquote a commie.
He's also doing it for alimony, so we already know he's divorced Barb.
When he got outed and pulled out of the advertising thing, that's when the cartoon version of the Vault Boy comes.
Okay. See, that's, I know that hasn't been necessarily put in there yet, but I think you're absolutely right. I think that's where it's going to go. And that would be the logical step. That's very cool.
I heard some people say, like, what's this implication that ghouls are just created and we know how they're created? It's like, it's not that we know.
We don't. That's the thing. This introduces a new bit of ghoul lore, and that now either it's always existed, and that would be a little silly, or in this far along in the timeline, they have either synthesized a medicine or have discovered a pre-war medicine with side effects that help stave off ghoulification. I actually think that's really neat, as long as it's something that was only discovered
recently,
you know, like within the last, because this is like, what, 14 years after the events of New Vegas, based on what I know in the timeline, 2296.
Oh, and yeah, that was another thing that pissed people off is when she goes to visit Vault 4 and then...
I was going to get to that, I want to put a big pin in that because I wanted to talk about the environments. But I did want to talk about this thing about the ghouls because I actually think that's a really neat idea. There's been a bunch of games where people have been like, lots of ghouls, including like Doc Barrows in Fallout 3, who's like in the museum in Washington going like, I'm studying ferals because I'm trying to find a way to understand when and how we go feral. And if there's a way to prevent ghouls going feral, or even revert ghouls from being feral. And this feels like the next logical step in that storyline is now we have this medicine or this serum or whatever that, that is what is helping stave that off. And I think that's really interesting. They have to be very careful with this, I think. But if the idea is that this has only been something that has been in the universe for a little bit, that's very cool. I think that's really neat.
Not to mention we have the medicine that turns someone into a ghoul.
Right, but that's been around since before the war.
Okay, it has. Okay, I wanted to confirm that.
I mean, that was said in Fallout 4. That's how Hancock became a ghoul.
That's also how Eddie Winter became a ghoul.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah.
So that lore was there in the Fallout game.
So I give him that. Like people, like the chicken fucker guy.
was that okay? You mentioned there was a comedian that. Abysme, you mentioned like in a drag that there was a comedian that you're like, it's just you that didn't find it funny.
Fred Armitage?
Fred Armisen. Oh, yeah. Oh God. Yeah, that's right.
I didn't love or hate that bit.
It just stood out as two people not making jokes for like, but pretending to make jokes. And I was like, what is this scene? Please stop. But like, again, minor ass nitpick. That's the one time I was not wowed by writing or dialogue in this whole fucking
eight episode spiel. I feel like it was a direct reference to Fred Armisen as being the Portlandia guy.
Yeah, thanks. Cool.
Right. Well, you pointed out, Kayla, in terms of references, that you think Lucy McClain is a pretty on-the-nose name for our main character.
This is the weird part. I was like, that has to be intentional, because in the movie Die Hard, John McClane's daughter is Lucy McClain. And this isn't like a name that's like, oh, you might hear. No, she says specifically in the first movie, Lucy McClain residence, Lucy McClain speaking, like her name is said very vividly quite a few times in that movie. So to choose that name feels like, And then, of course, in the fourth Die Hard, Lucy McClain is an actual character and she's actually.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was a reference, but I don't know why. but it's just an interesting name choice.
Yeah, I think it's neat.
Lucy's a very fitting name. Lucy is one of those names that does evoke innocence and naivete.
Yeah, I like Lucy.
Yeah,
I
love me too. Lucy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I got the points I wanted to hit mainly were stuff about the board meeting. About the ghouls. I want to talk about the environment.
Okay.
Are we good with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is interesting. We're seeing post-nuclear Los Angeles. We see Santa Monica. We see LAX. We see like the Hollywood Hills kind of area. We get a few locations that are in that. And it seems to me like a lot of it is these blasted sections of desert and these pockets of trees that are oases. And I think that's a really neat direction for it. It makes sense that like there would be this kind of aridification of the area following not only the, you know, the bombs, but also maybe the release of FEV into the atmosphere and shit like that. Like everything's fucked up in the environment, you know? What I was noticing though, that was interesting as they were doing this was like, I kept wondering, okay, but where's the NCR? Because we know that, you know, in by New Vegas, they talk about how big and how prosperous NCR is. And I'm so glad they addressed that. And I'm not even upset or anything that NCR is basically either in decline or completely wiped out, because the thing that got me really hopping was seeing in terms of like, oh my God, they're really paying attention to the lore, was when we find out about what happened to Shady Sands.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you had put a pin in that one, Kayla, about the frustration. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's when Lucy sees the board talking about the fall of Shady Sands. And they had to thread the needle very carefully on that, because like, the fall of Shady Sands is a different event to the nuking of Shady Sands.
Well, the problem is the fall of Shady Sands occurs before New Vegas, before New Vegas takes place. So it's like, what the fuck does that mean?
Maybe it's when Aaron Kimball was elected president.
Well, and there's a scene we have where Cooper gets captured by deputies and a sheriff. And I thought that was going to be NCR, but it wasn't.
I thought so too.
And I don't know how I feel about the NCR just being possibly gone, because you could explain it away in lore, but there's such a rich part of the lore. And a lot of the themes of this show are like, how do we get an authority figure that is, you know, that could be the closest that thing to like that what Lucy wants for the world.
Yeah.
And her hopes and her dreams and her faith and everything are being slowly deconstructed and torn down. But I can't imagine it's always going to be like that.
No.
So the fact that there's like the NCR is just gone seems a little strange.
Well, that's what I'm hoping is going to get unveiled more as we go toward, as we go into this next season, because we know how big a role the NCR plays specifically in the New Vegas story. And I know they're going to have, like, the story is probably, or their presence is going to be a factor into the next season, because again, they had that post, that credit sequence where you have that fly through of the environment and it shows, you know, the streets of Vegas. You see a downed NCR Vertibird, you see destroyed Securitrons, which implies that something big happened in Vegas between New Vegas and now. But
are they going to talk about the Battle of the Hoover Dam?
They're going to have to. Yeah. They're going to have to pick canon ending at some point.
Which one are they going to pick? And how many people are they going to piss off?
Six side with. are we getting an independent New Vegas? Are we going to see Yes Man? I hope so. Or are we going to get Mr. House? Like, I want to know.
It'd be weird if it wasn't Mr. House.
It would, because they set him up.
Yeah, they set him up, and it would be, or maybe they have like the NCR controls the dam, but they have an agreement to leave New Vegas as kind of an independent no man's land for all of the factions to exist in, which is kind of like, it's kind of the easy way out, but it would allow everyone to explore all the factions that we all know from New Vegas.
Right. It could also be, I was just thinking about this. We know that the NCR had gotten big enough that they were very expansionist by New Vegas, right, but they were spread thin. And on the billboard for Shady Sands, it says it's the first capital of the NCR. If it's not the capital anymore, for all we know, it's just that area has been more or less abandoned by the NCR, and that they have footholds elsewhere in the wasteland. If that's the case, why couldn't Vegas be one of those points? Or maybe they've pushed into other locations. I mean,
are you the NCR if your capital isn't in California? Kind of weird.
I mean, yeah, that's true. But I mean, to be fair, NCR, okay, we were laughing about this. To be fair, we're not even sure if NCR started in California. According to the location in the show, yeah, Shady Sands is just like in the valley or whatever. It's near Los Angeles. In the Fallouts 1 and 2, it's all over the place. It's usually like up near Nevada or near the Sierra, like the Sierra Nevadas. And it's like, what was the thing you saw on Reddit that made you laugh?
So I was trying to look up where does Shady Sands, like, does anybody have an idea where Shady Sands is located? And there's a Reddit post that says, where the hell is Shady Sands? And then this person goes over, it's like, no, what the fuck? It says it in this first game, it shows it here, which shows it would be here. But then in this game, no, so where the hell is it?
that is something that was interesting about the show, is it kind of makes this giant circle.
It
goes out to a bunch of different areas, and it all recoalesces kind of back at Shady Sands, essentially, or like adjacent. tread a lot of like familiar scenes a few times. And like, I get it. They're, you know, they can't, you know, have Lucy going to the fucking East Coast and everywhere, you know, throughout the show. But it also kind of makes it feel a little small. But then I also have to wonder, like, well, where was the Legion base? Was that Nevada? Was it Utah? Was it still like Mojave? I don't quite know.
I think they were far enough east that they needed to go west for a bit. I would say maybe it is Utah or maybe it is Nevada, like, or even Arizona. If it's Arizona, then they have to contend with Caesar's Legion.
That's a lot of walking on foot.
Then again,
they flew on Vertibird for a bunch of it, though.
But then again, Bobby passed.
Why do you think? Well, okay, that's Tarheesian. Motherfucker, I walked to Ramses' Legion.
Best fucking New Vegas mod.
So we were talking about the snake oil salesman earlier.
Yes.
One thing I did notice on a rewatch, first off, the product that Jim's Limb sells is terrible.
Yes.
Jim's Limbs, though. Fucking love Limbs. That box.
Listen, the economy was really sucking pre-war, and everything that you needed to get discount shit, these discount limbs, because going to the hospital would cost a bajillion dollars.
What I noticed on a rewatch, though, is that when fucking the guy from Lost is leaving on the fake leg, the snake oil salesman tries to stop him and says he has a serum that regrows feet.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out that he does.
Yeah. That was, I did like that turn of the story of, oh, and I kind of guessed after he said that, that line of like, a lot of radiation out there, not that you have to worry about that. And I went, oh, fuck, he just got turned into a ghoul, didn't he?
Yeah, he's going to slowly become more ghoulified, I think. If we see Thaddeus again later, he's going to be more ghoulified.
Thaddeus's reaction, though, is so great. He's like, Thaddeus, I think you're a ghoul now. Oh, fuck!
Oh, God.
You're going to kill me!
And if, since we're talking foot-related stuff, everyone's favorite, I do hashtag feet!
Tell us how you really feel, Alan.
One of my favorite moments is where they acknowledge Fallout's glitches and Maximus gets his foot caught on the on the environment.
That's right.
So on the Shady Sands front, though, like, it doesn't bother me if Shady Sands gets moved around where it is. And its destruction being a huge blow to the NCR. I'm still looking for answers about what actually happened. Like, if the fall of Shady Sands is just a precursor to this, then what the fuck was happening to NCR before its destruction? We get a glimpse of it. I thought that was cool in the flashbacks with Lucy and her mom and Lee, and you actually get to see it. And fun little detail, I love the fact that one of the, like, Sandcrete, obelisks is still in the town square, even though they've clearly advanced beyond the adobe buildings that they used to have there, right, in like Fallout's 1 and 2. It's neat to see, because everybody talked in New Vegas talks about Shady Sands and the NCR and its prime, and it's cool even for a second to see how New California's in society might have actually looked.
I, for my money, and I'm not saying that I would change the show, but if it were up to me, I would have just had the NCR as part of the show and less expository background about exactly what was happening with Vault-Tec back in the day.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know.
That's me personally, but yeah.
We do get a brief glimpse of NCR Ranger armor.
We do.
You do? Scavenged by those people.
Wouldn't it be sick if, like, in the second season, Veronica appears and she actually is played by Felicia Day? They'd be about the same age now. In the series, yeah. And she's now living her own life.
Show creators, if you're listening, please give us Felicia Day as Veronica.
Holy shit. And have her beat the fucking shit out of things.
Have her have the power fist.
Yes. I want to see her beat the shit out of things and just murder things.
So imagine my surprise when the NCR armor came off and it's Eric Estrada.
Oh, yeah, that was wild. I'm like, what's he doing here?
Chips is forever.
It's clearly scavenged, but... Yeah.
Still on the sunset of the NCR idea, though, watching that battle at the end at Griffith Observatory was legit brutal. And I think they did a really good job, in my opinion, making it be like, this is just pointless. Look at these people slaughtering each other. It just feels bad.
Right now, that is my favorite use of the Griffith Observatory in anything ever.
Yeah, I agree.
Just personally speaking.
Yeah. I mean, just to me, just watching these people slaughter each other is one of the first times in a long time I've watched media and gone, this is so senseless. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
From a story perspective, and thought, this is brilliantly done. War never changes. And you get to see how pointless this all is. Because these people are just survivors of Shady Sands. And
what's fucked up, like what they could do. But so, and this is something going back to how Maximus feels like a continuation of Finn's original storyline.
Mm-hmm.
It really feels like Lucy is kind of following the hero's journey in this show. Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
And so season two is going to have to be our lowest point, as low as it's gotten. It's going to have to be real tough.
Oh,
if she thinks that she's seen some brutality here, wait until she meets Caesar's Legion.
Oh my God.
Oh, I hope we get Caesar's. Oh my
they
God.
They could take this so, so dark. And they've been nailing everything in the show as far as tone and set dressing. So like Caesar's Legion, I'm excited, but I'm fucking almost a little scared.
I'm worried that they're going to, if they get the Legion, they're going to get them wrong. I'm always worried about that when it comes to getting more, because they're going to Vegas. Who knows what they'll run into. And again, they have to
have the canon ending. Fucking Cazadores.
Oh, God, yeah. Cazadores.
Deathclaw. I mean, they did hint at Deathclaws.
It would be weird not to have a Deathclaw eventually. It'd be weird not to do it.
Yeah.
I didn't know this about the lore until recently. The fact that Cazadores aren't even a result of, like, nuclear radiation. Someone made Cazadores, and fuck them.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yep, and I know who they are. We know who they are.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait, sorry. Abizri doesn't know yet.
No, I don't.
Oh, never mind. Sorry.
That's all right.
No spoilers, sorry.
We're already doing a lot of spoilers here anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay, imagine, like you're talking about the Legion, imagine we get to see Legate Lanius. If you did the speech ending where you just tell him to fuck off, he and the Legion to fuck off.
Imagine.
And then they come back years later.
Imagine if Lucy gets introduced to the Legion the same way the players do.
Oh my! Woo! I won the lottery.
And like, I don't want this show to just be a rehash of New Vegas. Of course, I want it to do new things, but that's such a good introduction.
Oh, it's the best introduction. It's so good.
That shit's just so fucking wild. And
I'm also curious to see how this Brotherhood of Steel went from we got to keep underground and never leave, and we have to do everything quietly, to we're the fucking Brotherhood of Steel, man. Huh.
Well,
I think there's like factions that are splintering within the Brotherhood, and the ones outside of like the New Vegas ones are like much more, like even more religious militants, and so the ones in New Vegas are a little bit more studious.
It's just New Vegas separate from like California as well. Then,
well, I don't know if there is a California chapter of the Brotherhood anymore, unless we're talking about the ones that we see in. We don't know where they're located, but in the beginning, it says specifically that their orders are coming to them from the chapter in the Commonwealth. So we're talking about either Arthur Maxson's group or some other East Coast chapter, providing you didn't kill them. And they left that vague.
They might have sent them over to California. Well, have they?
Well, okay. I that's why I think, based on some of the real world location stuff, that that chapter's like at an old military base in Utah. I think that's the location they actually filmed it in.
It looks like either Nevada or Utah. It doesn't look like California, or it's like really inland California.
Yeah. So they could be really inland, and they might not even have that much of a presence there, because they did have to travel west to get to places like Philly. They had to take over Philly to make it a Brotherhood base at the end of the season.
Not that it was tough.
Huh?
No.
Not that it was tough.
No, not at all. I mean, they just said they barely put up a fight, and I'm like, oh shit, Philly's theirs now. And the Brotherhood. Okay, the Brotherhood now has access.
I mean, the ghoul killed like what, half of the town.
That's true. The Brotherhood now has access to cold fusion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing. And by the way, Gracie, I will end you. Stop it.
That also feels a little like, okay, well, that if that's true, that it has monumental implications for all of Fallout.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a lore, a little bit of lore that I really liked. Y'all might appreciate this. So Cold Fusion, Lee Moldaver is working on the science to create essentially a theoretical infinite form of energy. Vault Tech buys out the proprietary rights because, being the staunch capitalists they are, they can't have that, or else they're, mm-hmm. that's energy tech that is, would essentially solve the world's energy crisis.
Yeah.
That's leading to the Sino-American War. But even though Vault Tech bought that, it wasn't like they didn't use it, because there has been instances of Cold Fusion specifically in Vault Tech in the lore of the games. The Garden of Eden creation kit uses the Cold Fusion reactors.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's what helps the vaults that have it establish their settlements. Shady Sands had one. Vault 8 had one. That's how Vault City was established. And I know a GEC is like the MacGuffin that you need in Fallout 3 in order to create pure drinking water in the Potomac River. So there's the cold, and they mentioned that the GECs are powered by a cold fusion generator. Like, it's that same micro generator that fits in a briefcase.
Right.
Hey, is Lee Moldaver a synth?
Maybe, yeah.
Oh! Maybe. I didn't think about that. Maybe.
Did they mention synths at all in this season?
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if not a synth, then maybe a Kellogg kind of situation where she's a cyborg, maybe?
Maybe.
I like the idea. If she's a synth, that'd be cool, but I don't know.
If as has been said several times, everyone knows who Moldaver is. Maybe there's multiple of them.
Maybe.
Oh, that would be sick.
By the way, the whole reveal that Lucy's mom is a feral ghoul and she just happens to be at that table, something feels kind of off-putting about that.
Yeah, again, it makes this world feel very small, but I felt like we walked on foot through like the tri-state area. It's a little strange.
Here's my thing that I think works.
I did joke with David that I'm like, well, I mean, it's kind of like the game itself. Like, how the fuck you...
It was implied they were close.
That she would keep Ghoul Rose around seems like a weird quirk of hers. Like, it didn't feel that weird to me, personally.
I thought it was kind of like, hey, by the way, I just happen to have your mom right here. Surprise!
Your friendly bartender.
Like one of the first things Moldaver says in like the big bad guy reveal is that you look like your mother.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. David thinks they were in lesbians.
Yeah,
possible.
Because at the end, she's like, we did it, Rose, and like hold her hand. I'm like, that's gay.
I wouldn't keep the ghoul corpse of my lover around. That feels
no,
weird.
I wouldn't either.
Granted, I don't live in the Fallout universe, so you know.
Also, Moldaver's kind of fucked up anyway. So.
Sorry, David.
Yeah.
It's okay. I know if you went feral, I'd put you down.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Yes, please.
I really, really liked how they handled ghouls going feral. Constantly trying to remind themselves of their name. Everyone who portrayed that in the show did it very, very well. I thought it was a very nice touch.
Mm-hmm. I'm just happy with the ghoul stuff in general. I hope we get more of that. We will get more of that going forward. We're going to have to, since one of our leads is a ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like I've said my piece on it mainly.
The approach to sex also in this is hilarious.
Oh, with Lucy and
Lucy, just with them, he was like, oh, do you want to have sex?
No, if I do that, my penis explodes. It gets weird. I don't like that.
Not mine, of course. But that's normal. What?
Huh?
What do we want to see in the future? I want to see energy and / laser weaponry.
Yes. More Matt Berry. More Matt Berry.
I would really like to see. I mean, it's a long shot, but Jason Bright. I would love to see Jason Bright in the Repcon facility. That would be cool, but it's asking a lot. Or maybe not Jason Bright, but like just something along those lines. Something very just, you know, Ray Punk and the cool shit you get in New Vegas that just feels so out there. It would be really cool. But and if they, you know, just keep with that tone, I'll be very happy.
This may be wishing too much, and I don't think it's feasible, but God damn it, if the fan doesn't want to see Joshua Graham.
I would like to see
the Kings.
Yes.
Oh yeah. That would be fun.
Some of the goofier gangs, I'd like to see the Kings. I'd also like, it'd be cool if they had any references to Marcus and the friendly super mutants, or the quote unquote friendly super mutants that live up in the ski lodge.
It'll be weird if we don't see super mutants in season two.
We're going to have to see super mutants.
Yeah. Yeah.
And give me a straight up horror episode.
Yes.
Where our protagonists are, in close encounters with like a death claw and are sneaking around a death claw.
Like there's so many caves in New Vegas. It would be cool to do one with a death claw, like stalking them through it. And maybe like that's a tunnel from point A to point B.
That'd be so sick.
I would like to see Caesar's Legion as well, if possible.
I'm assuming we're going to get it. It'd be so weird if we didn't. And yeah, I hope that they're, I can't wait to see people in those outfits. I'm so excited for it.
Just one of my random notes is all the 50s stuff is cool, but my favorite aspect of the Fallout aesthetic is big chunky pistols.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see an NCR Ranger roll in and do something cool while Big Iron plays in the background.
I want Big Iron to play in the background.
I want Mr. New Vegas to be on the radio. You can get
Wayne
Newton to do it. He's still around.
I want something that we're not going to get, unfortunately. I would have loved to see Matthew Perry as Ghoul Benny.
Oh.
You know, if he were still alive, he would have like ran over and be like, I will fucking do Benny. Put me in, coach. Do it. Like he fucking loved that series. Oh man. Aww.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
I'm going to also add, the biggest thing for me, the most realistic thing, in my opinion, though, I don't necessarily need there to be Caesar's Legion. I don't even necessarily need to be NCR. I want good lore reasons for some of the stuff that hasn't been explained yet. That's the biggest thing I care about right now, is that they stick as close as they can to the lore. They can do their own thing. That's fine. Just as long as it doesn't drift too far, as Tim Kaine put it when it came to the lore drift, I don't want it to drift too far from the source in terms of like to the point where it might retcon something, because they can pick a canon ending to New Vegas. That is fine. I just need there to be a satisfying, this is what happened to the NCR. This is what happened to the Legion. This is what happened to Vegas.
What would be satisfying if we don't see the NCR? Oh, they're somewhere else. Okay, that's probably the best case scenario.
No, but then tell us why.
If we get a good explanation as to why, you are taking out, you know, let's say both them and Caesar's Legion are in New Vegas. That's gonna be weird. That's gonna be the two omnipresent factions gone. I don't think they can do that.
They got to do one or the other or both when it comes to them being involved. Even if it's just remnants. If I don't even care if it's remnants of NCR, like we legitimately go ahead and lean into, hey, NCR is basically kaput. They're in decline, or there's only remnants scattered in the holdout since the destruction of Shady Sands or whatever, or the death of President Kimmel. Keep it satisfying. So far, I'm okay with the questions that have been raised about the NCR. And again, this is not coming from someone who ever has done an NCR playthrough. I don't think it's like a faction I would join. It's just important to know like where they were in the timeline. This is a faction we have followed from Fallout 1, from humble beginnings in Shady Sands to eventually being one of the major political powers on the West Coast in this post-nuclear world, and then watching them fall to corruption as they pushed east in an eastward kind of manifest destiny kind of deal, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's important. And to me, it's important to not discredit the role that the New California Republic has in the universe as a faction. And I felt like this tiptoed around that. Like, they yeah. could have gone badly and it didn't, but it's still, I'm still waiting for those answers. What happened to NCR?
We, in this whole breakdown, didn't even talk about who was probably my favorite character in the show.
Oh, who is?
I don't even remember his name because I have issues keeping track of character names, and if I have the issue enough times, I assign them a name. Ferret Brother.
Oh, Norm!
Norm!
I can't believe yeah.
Oh my god, he was actually pretty... No. He was really, one of those, actors that really nailed whatever part this was. At first I was like, why do we need a younger brother? It's pointless. But then seeing his arc is very fascinating. Also, yeah. I had to look it up. He is 5'1".
Short yeah. king.
Yeah. Hey, short king.
We stand a short king.
Him next to Chad?
Chet.
Our beautiful himbo.
Them next to each other is hilarious every time you look at it.
It is.
And I looked it up. Chet's only, the actor who plays Chet is only like 5'9".
Oh, so they just put him on like, you know, platform shoes or something.
Yeah.
Their photography.
Well, I mean, the other actor's 5'1". There's an 8-inch.
Yeah, but he looks 6'3".
Yeah. It looks like someone who's like 4'8" standing next to someone who's 6'4".
Yeah.
It looks like anybody standing next to Shaq. Like,
That's another thing I could praise this this show for, because my favorite moment in the show is when she meets like that random dude who's trying to put sand in his water filter to make more water. Yeah, that whole exchange is so just Fallout NPC goodness.
Yes.
And it has my favorite line, which is just him saying, "This could all be yours." I don't go to Philly. I had an aunt that died there once.
More random notes. I don't think the water chip actually broke. I think they were pushing an overseer election.
They sure were.
Yeah, probably.
Because water chips breaking is such a Fallout trope, and I love that they put that in there.
It's the plot of the first game.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. The fact that was in there, I'm like, pfft.
Everyone having a Pip-Boy that early was kind of weird.
We had three vaults connected to each other. That alone was weird. But I grew okay with it more as we went along.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm with you.
Maybe my biggest... Maybe the nitpick that stuck with me the most is the past retro-futurist aesthetic wasn't futurist enough.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
It went a little too 50s on,
I would say. It is way, way, way too... Like, apparently people who don't know the lore watch this show and assume that's an alternate universe 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, we needed more of the tech, I think, to make it make sense. Like, there's Zach's AI. There's, you know, more robots around. There's monorails and, you know, the atomic-powered cars. And we needed to see more of the future tech.
And strange for how much time we spend in that time period.
True.
They didn't capitalize on that. It's very weird.
There's also, as Brian David Gilbert pointed out in an Unraveled, I don't think enough attention is given to how weird it is that apparently at some point people just stopped making music.
Hey, gang.
Yeah.
What if I told you I have a lore explanation for that that's coming up in Dayglow?
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, you told me about that.
I told you about this, but I'm going to leave it a surprise for you two.
You want to explain Dayglow for our listeners?
I mean, I guess I might as well.
Fighter of the Night Glow?
It's champion of the glow.
Oh, a glowing ghoul is the other thing I wanted to see in the next season.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. If there's ever a time for a glowing ghoul, it's there. Then again, good restraint, good emphasis on the stuff they did show. We saw rad roaches. Yeah. We saw Yao Guai. You know, we saw at least one Brahmin, and it was adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Haven't seen a rat scorpion.
No mole rats.
Yeah.
But plenty of rad roaches.
Oh, plenty of rad roaches.
We got the gulper, whose design was sick as fuck.
Hell yeah.
Now, I know awesome. The gulpers were a thing in Far Harbor, but I like that this gulper was like a mutation from Vault 4, which was another cool Vault Tech experiment. I kind of appreciated the idea, like, what would happen if we filled a vault with scientists and they had no moral oversight?
Yeah.
Welcome to Rapture.
I mean, I was going to say, I almost feel like, in a way, like, the considering how many other vaults are out there, I almost wonder if the Bud Adkins vault, thinking like, oh, we can nuke the world and have, keep it, the surface clean, and then have all these people loyal to Vault Tech show up. I wonder if Bud was unwittingly part of his own Vault Tech experiment, you know?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Vault Tech, like, that doesn't seem like a very foolproof plan for Vault Tech, because it's just three vaults in the wider world of vaults. And not every vault has that prerogative. If that was really Vault Tech's entire goal, then it would be implemented in every vault. But I think there's more going on to that. I think even Bud was being duped, and that's why he's now on a Roomba.
I like that Bud's whole pre-bomb drop personality is the guy at work who no one likes.
Oh, that was good. Okay, so I feel like are we getting close to wrap up, because I can talk about Daglo.
Yeah.
Bud's the guy who says stuff like synergy and handshakefulness.
He was a really well done in that respect. He's that guy. I love it.
And you could just see both. God, my brain says the ghoul, but Cooper. Cooper's face anytime he appears, like, oh, fuck me.
That's fucking guy. So good.
We're just being too polite to say, please shut the fuck up.
Yeah. So Daglo is a tabletop Fallout game that I am campaigning that these three lovely people are the player characters in. And without going too much into it, it's set in 2186. So it's between the events of Fallouts 1 and 2. And it's my attempt at having a kind of an origin story for a place in the Fallout lore that's not super well touched on. Basically, it's my chance to kind of explore how... give a world for a sandbox for these three to play in and possibly affect the future of Daglo as we move toward the early days of the new California
Republic.
What's
Daglo?
Daglo is post-nuclear San Diego, if you don't know that from the lore. It's only mentioned a couple times, but you visit the Glow itself, which is the West Tech Research Facility in Fallout 1, but you never actually get to go to the nearby settlement of Daglo, which, cool bit of lore there, is the origin point of the people that would one day become the followers of the apocalypse. Oh, I want to see the followers.
I want to see
the followers in future iterations of the Fallout show. I mean, second season or somewhere else, you know? That'd be nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry, I completely forgot about the followers of the apocalypse.
They're going to have to be very careful with who they give screen time, because there's just so many factions.
There's so many, I know.
They
were good about it here, so...
I have the Fallout role playing book as well, and it got me thinking about where I live and how there's so little established lore in Fallout for Kansas. I feel like I could flesh out what my brain keeps telling me to call Fountain City. Yeah,
that's dope. I'd play in that game. So we're already a bit into Daglo. We've done like a couple of sessions, and it seems to be going well. But yeah, it's a cool, again, I think one thing that can be said is, like, ask not what Fallout can give to you. Ask what you can give to Fallout. And that's how you avoid making Fallout homogenous. And again, that's why I appreciate what the show is, its own story in the same universe, couched really well. But it's not trying to retell anything. It's its own thing. And that's good. Do that. And that's what I'm trying to do with Daglo. And yeah, my biggest thing that I'm waiting to drop on you all is an in-universe lore explanation, at least from one character that I'm thinking of, about why the music is all so dated.
Man, we didn't get into another important thing, which was Bethesda shitting itself.
Well,
oh yeah,
that's not news. That's just Bethesda.
Yeah.
Well, the unique way that they shit themselves this time, they have all this goodwill, and like if you look at Steam, like every Fallout game has like a ton of players right now, but especially Fallout 4. So Bethesda's like, we're gonna roll out the next gen update for Fallout 4, and it's gonna break all the mods. and oh, ruin, God, yeah. ruin your saves that have mods.
God, this is why I'm grateful that we hadn't gotten far enough to start installing mods yet.
Yeah,
but still, I saw that Fallout London got delayed as a result.
Delayed indefinitely.
Oh fuck!
Gotta roll out more content for Starfield or something.
There's a whole Starfield DLC that I prepaid for like a dumbass. In the future, where I ever fucking pick up that game ever again, I'm probably going to. God damn it!
If you got the DLC, well, you know, maybe some. You know, sometimes a DLC is all you need.
Ladies and gentlemen, typical Bethesda player in their natural state. God damn it! Why did I order this? Fuck this game. Yeah, I'm gonna play it.
I feel like I talked about Starfield previously on this show and gave a general recommendation for it. Hey, anyone listening now, if you're considering playing Starfield, don't do it!
I think the best description I've heard of Starfield is it's aggressively mid.
It's aggressively mid. Oh, joy.
I went on a tangent in our group chat about Starfield. Which is just like, I haven't beaten Fallout 4, but I think I would have beat Fallout 4 if it were more boring. Because, like, 40 hours into Starfield, I'm gay married to a cowboy, and I'm the best at, like, charming people and pistols. And that was the peak of the game for me. And I played the game for 160 more hours.
Holy shit.
I'm just hoping Elder Scrolls is not fucked up, whatever new installment they make.
And it's 160 hours of me like, okay, I go to another fucking identical temple and work out and do another fucking identical puzzle to get a goddamn superpower because I'm the Starborn. Yeah, you heard me, everybody. The Starborn. That's the plot of Starfield, is you are the Starborn. Like the Dragonborn, but you know, like stars? That's...
Gee, this is the weirdest remake of Star is Born that I've heard of at this point.
Hey, video game devs, stop making procedurally generated galaxies. You're not good at it. No. Stop. Stop making a bunch of planets that don't mean anything as a selling point.
For motherfucking hours, you work towards a goddamn ending. So just because, like, I have to see the end of this. I have to see why this is like the way it is. There has to be some justification for this at the end. But no, there isn't. The end of the game is it reboots the universe into like an in-universe New Game Plus, where you play through the mission, but like occasionally different things in the storyline happen. And it's so very occasional that it took IGN like 4 playthroughs of the game to realize that it happened. Don't play Starfield!
Someone at Bethesda thought that was really clever.
That's 200 goddamn hours of my life I'm never getting back. Mm-hmm. Oh, and in the New Game Plus, you just keep your stats, not the starships that you spent hours designing.
Oh, fuck
not
that.
All of your custom weapons.
Fuck that. Absolutely fuck that noise.
I 40 hours into Starfield, I recommended this game to our listeners, and this is 200 hours later, Alan apologizing, and that game can eat my whole fucking asshole. I'm probably going to play the DLC.
This is why I don't pre-order games anymore, especially not Bethesda games. I give it a month minimum.
So anyway, yeah, I really like the Fallout TV series.
Yeah,
go watch Fallout.
Yeah, that's great. It. Go watch it if you haven't. We do it's it only like we did. Subscribe to Prime for 2 seconds, watch the entire show, then unsubscribe from Prime until the next season. That's how
I really like that it was only 8 episodes.
That's, me too.
It's easy to consume pretty quickly.
We watched like 2 a night for a bit, and then by the end of it, we were just going to do one, and they were like, oh no, this is good. We need to watch the next one.
We like started on a Friday on a Thursday and did like 3 episodes and went, oh, fuck, we have to go to work. And then Friday night, just binge the rest of it.
There you go. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. By the way, if you'd like to, hey, everybody, if you'd like to get your money for nothing and chicks for free, If you're not subscribed to this podcast, sure, we appreciate getting your feedback. Hey, thanks for listening, first of all. And we are, you know, we enjoy hearing what y'all think. If you stayed to the end of this very unhinged, off the dome nerd rant from all four of us, thank you for that. And, you know, if you want to give us feedback, you can give us feedback wherever you listen to this. Ratings and reviews are always appreciated. We like to talk to people, so that helps. We've got some cool stuff coming up on the horizon.
Is this the point where you announce?
Well, I mean, sort of. I mean, I'm going to leave that to Dr. Satan. Dr. Satan has an announcement to make. It should be out around the same time this does. Keep an eye out, an ear out. Maybe it'll be out by now, maybe it won't. But Dr. Satan's cooking up something.
Also pay attention to the Creative Horror website for the reveal at the same time.
Indeed, creativehorror.com is where you want to go. And that's where you can find all of our fine podcasts, which include the Jameson Tapes, which dropped an episode this the afternoon that we recorded this. So That's nice to see. You got a brand new one. There's also Darkly Lit and Midnight Marinara and The Witching Hour and Trick or Track and Creepy Cooking Staff and all those things, some which are continuing, some which are concluded, but have a nice backlog of stuff for you to listen to if you want to consume them. They're very enjoyable stuff. We also, if you want to support the show and our endeavors of the network in general, patreon.com/creativehorror is the place to go. Any dollar amount gets you all the extra content, including for this episode, the dregs that we're not dragging out, which is all about Alan's adventures and misadventures on the open sea.
So there's one faction that's pirates, and they're called the Crimson Fleet. And and I go in saying, hey, I want to be a pirate, but I want to be a good guy pirate, so I'll join the Crimson Fleet. The Crimson Fleet are so fucking unapologetically evil. There needed to be one more faction that was the good guy pirates. That's like all...
So what I've learned is don't get Starfield.
If you take anything away from this entire rant slash mostly praise and analysis of the Fallout TV show, it's this. Don't buy Starfield.
Don't pre-order Bethesda games.
Playing Fallout New Vegas, it's great.
And Bethesda never changes.
Good evening, intrepid listeners. This is the Pasta Shade, the host of Midnight Marinara, and this podcast is part of creativehorror.com, a network of podcasts and creators working together to build a constructive community of horror fans. For more content like this, visit us at creativehorror.com.